Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to the Metaverse Podcast. This is episode 53, recording on March 28th. I'm Jero, joined by Fo Shizzle.
Hey, everyone.
Highway.
Hello.
And Skyline.
Hello, everyone.
So, we are at just about the end of the winter season. We still have a couple shows that have episode 12 just left, like Junketsu no Maria, Yorino Yatterman, a couple there. So, but the majority, I believe, of the winter season has ended, so I figured we'd get back together to do a podcast and talk about those shows. And of course, there's some fall shows that have ended this season that we can talk about too, like Chirobako, among others. But let's get started with some news right here. Sekirei manga is going to end in volume 18. Volume 17 was just released, and that's where it was confirmed that the manga would be ending. And for people that remember the 2008 and 2010 series that were released, I found the 2010 series to be a bit of a mess, pure engagement, because they did it too soon, and they did a lot of anime original content, which was not very good. So I'm not really hopeful or anticipating an anime once the manga concludes.
Yeah, that's got a lot of manga ending. Recently I saw, I think, Captain Earth, that manga's ending. I never read it, So I didn't really care. But yeah, there's a bunch of series ending.
So, yeah, it does seem like that. It seems like, you know, maybe it's time to refresh for a lot of mangaka and authors.
Yeah, I keep getting my fingers crossed for Bleach being on this list of manga ending, but
boy,
it's never
really
going
to
happen.
Need to be.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
There's official endings, and then there's, wow, that ended quite some time ago, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the fans, it ended a while ago. I mean, I feel that way. It should have ended a while back, but
should have ended after Soul Society arc, and that was, what, like 500 chapters ago or so?
Yeah, easily. Yep.
Kantai Collection is going to be getting an anime sequel. I don't know which season. Do we know which season yet? Summer? Fall?
I would assume a summer, or probably next winter. I mean, yeah, a lot of people, I looked at the malforms, a lot of people were pissed off about that it ended, and they had the guts to announce a season two. I'm like, I don't see a problem with this. You know, I liked it, but, you know, whatever.
I don't know. I mean, as long as they've been saying, oh yeah, Kantai Collection is going to be next season, I mean, that was like, what, 2.5 years ago or something?
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
so it could be forever, or it could be a fake one, like has been known to be done before. Yeah, we're going to do a second season.
Right. I mean,
just put that in there hoping that somebody will pick it up.
I mean, Till a Rude Darkness did the same thing where it was going to come out another season, but they're like, no, it's going to be an OVA. But then they came back and said, no, it's a series. So they didn't specify what kind of season is going to be for Kankai. It may be an OVA, maybe a movie, no one knows. So
I would think, I guess, not knowing that much, I would assume another TV series.
Another TV series.
Think how immensely popular that franchise is.
Oh yeah.
Well, you have to ask, is Diode Media, are they really used to doing sequels? Are they yet really used to doing second series when you get right down to it? They've done a lot this past winter. But there have been a lot of popular series that were out there that have been, you know, kind of demanding second seasons that they never got. You know, Problem Children being one of them, of course, but that's just being a favorite.
Well, I'm looking at more like a Dora Ross situation where they know the studio has to pick it up and do it. I mean, they did the same thing for, you know, a bunch of other shows did that. So, I mean, another studio will take over. People may not like it, but, you know, that's how it goes.
Log Horizon.
Steins Gate, we have a sequel for this one. Fosh, you got some more details?
The only thing I know is just I guess they're releasing a game and an anime. I think I was reading it was not a true sequel, but maybe like after stuff that happened. I'm not sure how many years it takes place, but everyone knows in the Steins Gate, you know, Robotic Notes and Chaos Head Universe, it's the same, you know, world, sort of, different times, obviously. So this one might be more, I'm hoping they explore more time travel and playing with that. I mean, it was really interesting the way they set it up. Always was I think the best they
could do. That was a surprise, and I'm looking forward to their releasing the video game mm-hmm. for the first Steins Gate on the PS3. And as somebody that I have a Mac, and I don't have the know at all or the interest really to download mm-hmm. it for Windows on sites where you can do that. I'm looking forward to playing that game because that was one I was always interested in after having watched the series.
Right.
Also, on the subject of the studio that makes Steins Gate, 5PB, they're making another science adventure game called Chaos Child, or their game actually is getting an anime.
Yep, and that's, again, more Chaos Head that I don't think anyone's really asking for, but apparently they want to make it, so, I mean, who knows, maybe it can be better than the original. Mm-hmm. I don't think so, but...
Sony Pictures has acquired rights to the live-action Robotech film. And,
yeah, that's been, like... They've been trying to get that for a long time.
Oh, man.
And you would think after Dragon Ball Evolution, they wouldn't make any more anime movies, but, you know, I'd give them thumbs up for trying. You know, they can't do any better, any worse than, you know, Transformers right now. That's, you know, that's kind of the trashiest thing we can have right now.
Well, it just makes me wonder is, you know, what they have to say. I mean, with the Robotech franchise, is this basically just going to be they just want Macross in that, or are they going to bridge the gap and do Army of the Southern Cross and then Genesis Climber Muspedia in that as well? Because, I mean, that's three separate anime franchises that Harmony Gold kind of said, hey, let's force weld these three shows together so we can have as many episodes as syndicated TV back in the 80s needs us to have so we can show it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more of them trying to get the next, like, Sony wants the next, you know, Star Wars type of series they want to do. I mean, they don't really have very many popular movie franchises right now, mm-hmm. so they got to get ahead of Disney somehow. So they're like, oh, let's do this. So I don't know, it's not going to work, I don't think.
Trying to find the next Star Wars is
right.
never a good Stupid. Idea.
Yeah, never. I mean, no, I don't think so.
Moving on, Tokyo Ghoul, the Square Root of A season ended. Is it going to get another one?
It looks like they're setting up another season. The way it ended was no real spoilers, but it just kind of ends on a cliffhanger. So you're like, okay, what's going on? I heard rumors of another studio picking up and redoing all of it. I'm like, that's kind of dumb. Because it ends with like a shot of a thing on a wall saying R-E-D-O, which one's like, okay, it's redo. So someone's going to pick it up and do it over again. I'm like, that's dumb. In my opinion, it's like, if a studio can't do it the first time, why pass it to someone else to see if they can do it? I mean, I don't know. Hammer Tor had the same issue.
Redo, you know, Kara Pictures and Ano Hideki is going to pick it up. You cannot Tokyo Ghoul.
I hope so. I mean, I just never got behind the series. I just thought it was kind of weak for a lot of reasons.
You know, I always thought that, you know, its background had some interesting, really salient points to it. That kind of idea of how because vampires and ghouls, in a lot of traditional fiction, they kind of live, you know, beyond the fringes and not in contact right. with the normal world. This one, where they kind of like push them out to where people were aware of their existence and scared of their existence. They just never really did much with that. They never showed the impact of what ghouls living in a society actually had about, you know, how they could feed undetected. They hinted at it, and all those hints were really tantalizing. But when they never followed up on those, I gradually lost more interest in the show.
I mean, if Toka was the main character and Kaneki wasn't, it'd be better. I mean, she's got a more interesting story. Like you said, she deals with all that, blending in with the humans and having to, you know, act like she eats the food and afterwards she has to do something else. Yeah. So she was more interesting.
Other than that, it becomes typical shonen, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So it getting a third season, it would be no surprise to me. It seems to be a hit with a certain crowd, so they're going to keep doing it.
Hey, it might be Tokyo Ghoul. Here's the cafe.
Yeah.
Yoimushi Petal is going to be getting a feature film this summer, which for people that like it, great. But I guess for some, they'll be expecting a very long race.
No, it won't even be a race. It'd be like the very long start. have to get to the first 100 yards, and it'll take an hour and a half. The show never goes anywhere. Slowest bike racing ever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's interesting fun because it's just, you know, you get to see the characters progress, and but yeah, it's very slow, like you said.
Mm-hmm. And oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to have a funny comment, but it's not really that funny.
All right. And then the last item we have here, not really newsy exactly, but Funimation has been on a dubbing spree this season. For people that have been following Funimation and seeing what they've been doing this season, they've been doing a sort of a broadcast dub series. They worked on this with Psycho Pass, and I believe the series is called Laughing Under the Clouds last season. Mm-hmm. And they have done that for a lot more series in the winter season, which has been their best season, I believe, as far as acquiring simulcast anime like Assassination Classroom, Rolling Girls, mm-hmm. and some more.
They got like Death Parade, and they got, it's just, for me, I noticed that episode 7, you know, of the regular, you know, releases, mm-hmm. and Funimation comes out, and they're in episode 3 already dubbed. I'm like, wow, that's a first. I mean, Space Dandy was even faster with them dubbing at the same time, but this one is like, you know, a week after they dubbed it.
Space Dandy was designed to be a concurrent production, but what Funimation's doing now is basically they've got the actors on staff, they've got the translators on staff, they've got the writers on staff, they've got the facilities to record it, and they're just saying, well, we get these properties, we're going to churn out the dubs while the things are still current.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's not a bad strategy. I mean, there are people who like dubs who don't want to wait to shows. They want to talk about the shows with their friends. And if they're 4 episodes behind, that's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And remember, Funimation is on production committee in a lot of these shows, if not all of them.
Yeah.
I really like this of them. I haven't watched any yet. I haven't gotten to watch any, but I love the idea of the one thing that was kind of plagued the anime industry very early on with fan subs was that people preferred the fan subs because it would take anime distributors years to release content, and now we're seeing, you know, with the simulcast and now with this dubbing, seeing very quick turnaround. I kind of wonder, like, what is the overall quality in doing something right now as it airs in terms of Funimation producing a dub versus maybe waiting for the series to end. And
I doubt it'll be that bad. For one, I mean, the only thing I'd worry about that I've seen other people worry about is that that there'll be a little bit too much sameness, because they have an even more limited voice actor pool than like the anime does.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what they're trying to fight with, and maybe they'll get more. But some people have been asking, well, can they make any money doing this? And other people are like, you got to think they've looked at the business case for it if they're going to go all in like this on it.
Yeah.
So they think there's money to be made there.
Yeah.
Lots of companies have taken a look at, is there money to make in exporting anime, period, and a lot of them aren't with us anymore. Action Masters, Genion, they're bankrupt and gone, and there are bad memories. So, I mean, they could have a business model in place. They could not have a business model in place.
Yeah, but I think that what we're seeing now is when shows are licensed, they're not licensed for, hey, this is our rights to eventually distribute it in the U.S., now we're getting, this is, you have the license to rights to broadcast it immediately after we do, which is a huge difference.
It is, but I'm not a fan of dubs, clearly, but a lot of people are, so I'm happy to see that a lot more people are going to be able to get involved in it if they do prefer dubs. My only concern with Funimation is I still believe that their internet streaming is absolutely terrible in comparison to competition. Crunchyroll has a much cleaner stream, better font choice, better font placement. Well, good font placement that needs improvement, but that's always the case. But Funimation is far worse. Their color gradients are always off. Their fonts are terrible.
Their fonts are terrible. Actually, their font is good. I don't mind their main font, especially compared to Crunchyroll's web streaming font, which is not the best either.
But they do improve on some shows here and there. Yeah.
But the other thing is that Funimation's have no style.
None.
And when you have two people talking, the style sucks. When you have something going on in the background, you can't tell it apart.
Right.
And yeah, Crunchyroll has got that nailed.
Mm-hmm. They know where sign placements is. I watched one episode of a show to where it was just like they had subtitles for 4 and 5 signs in the middle of the screen blocking everything, and then two conversation streams, one going on top, one going on bottom. I'm thinking, well, this is visual mud. Thanks.
Yep.
And your screen's too dark.
Yeah, but the only thing I was going to say on all that was I've seen most of the first 2-3 episodes of the dubs that they've done, and I really haven't heard the same actor in any of them. I mean, they're probably like different characters, not the main cast, but they do switch it up every once in a while, and where you hear a main in one series be it an, like a support in another role in another series. So,
yeah, as long as they can keep that up.
Yeah.
I took the opportunity to listen to a Rolling Girls one today, and I want to have a heart-to-heart talk with the voice actress doing Chiaia. Sweetie, you need to do this different. Well, she's cute. Yeah. You're annoying.
It can't be as bad as Yuri Kuma, my only complaint. They actually do the gar-gar, and they actually say it in English.
Oh, they do gal-gal.
So, yeah, they do that. They do that. That's in there. So, I mean, for me, I think I give them props for putting it in there because it's a highlight from the anime that I kind of liked. Yeah. So, I mean, for them to do that is kind of funny.
And also, Do Rubber Raw, they're doing that too with the dub. So
yep.
I think
all the original cast in the first series, they're back doing that. And that to me is pretty cool. Yeah. Seeing that they want to come back and do it again. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty much older now since they've done the first series. So to hear them come back as their iconic voice actor character is kind of fun. I'm like, wow, this like they didn't, you can't hear any differences. But yeah, I'm excited because more DVDs will come out faster, maybe.
Or, if you're subscribed to these services, I mean, you always have it there available to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what Funimation would probably like as much as people buying Blu-rays and stuff is to be subscribed.
Right, definitely.
Like Crunchyroll changed up some things with their subscription service recently, and now we can read manga, which is great. For subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that has been our news. Let's get on to talking about the winter season, and we're going to start off with a segment about all of the fantasy harem shows that have come out this season. Five of them were very popular this season in many ways, good and bad. There was Fafnir, Isuka, Absolute Duo, World Break, and Shinmai Mao no Testament were the 5 series. Plenty of censorship in a lot of places on the TV version, certainly. And surely, harem hijinks up the butt. All right, so...
Literally, in some cases.
Oh.
Yes.
All right, so what Highway, Sky Lion, and Fushizzle have done, they've made all these categories and they ranked them from 1 to 5. And what we're going to discuss here is for characters and action and such, the guys are going to reveal their number 1 picks. And we'll kind of talk about the totality of the series at the end. And then on the post for Metaverse episode 53, we'll have a spreadsheet where you can see the full results of the voting for each category. And we get started with our first category of character. Skyline, of these series, which one do you think had the best characters?
I think as far as character look and design, Absolute Duo kind of fulfilled that out. It edges all of them out, mainly because, it had Julie as the superb loli that she was. And I always favor that. Mal comes in second because it had a similar character in Maria. So, I always, favor my strong points.
Hmm. Highway?
I had Absolute Duo first also, but because it had Imari. World Break was second for me, even though, the World Break's kind of like a bit polarizing. Hmm. But I just like the way it looked.
Yeah, I never watched it, but the girl with the eye that you could see through her hair, that was always weird to me.
It was weird.
That's a trick they keep on pulling. I saw that show today.
And Fosh?
Yeah, I went with World Break, a little different than Duo for me. I don't know why. I think the characters just, for me, stood out more. They had more personality to them. each of them are a little different, and they had like, I don't know, even when they fight, I don't think anything I didn't like was the outline they did when they had their powers activated. They had this weird glow to them, so it looked a little weird. And I'm a little surprised at Skyline, because it's like, you didn't like Maya from, you know, that World Break, the little girl that was the body pillow, technically, is what she kept calling herself.
Future hair member. Well, yeah, that's why third.
Yep. Yeah, but yeah, that's why I like the World Break. They're okay.
All right, and for action, we'll go with the same order. Sky, go first.
I think World Break edges them out because there was a little bit more diversity of action, and they kind of changed it up and mixed it up a little bit more. In comparison to a lot of the other shows, sometimes the enemies felt a little bit undifferentiated. You couldn't exactly tell who or what they were fighting at any given moment. But, you know, World Break, they were practicing against each other and then fighting against some monsters. And then the main character went off and fought some more other supporting characters, and they fought another monster. So there was just a breakup in action. It felt like they were more diversified.
Yeah, I had World Break also, just because pretty much the same thing as Skyline. They did a lot of different kind of things. It wasn't just the Monster of the Week. Mao, I also liked because they had the same kind of thing and moved the setting around quite a bit due to who had to come fight Mio.
Yeah, I went with Duo on that one because I think the variety of weapons they used was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. From like shields to like swords, to even guns, which might surprise them. Like, I wouldn't take a gun, but I thought most of them were going to be melee weapons. But yeah, it was kind of cool to see the variety of weapons. I wouldn't say so much for the enemy types. They are kind of like these CGI, like Halo clone-looking things. Mm. They're that kind of crap. And the other guy, he had this, like, they had a Robocop suit where you could, like, fly and shoot lasers. I didn't like him either, so. God, but yeah, I mean, the main cast had cool weapons anyway. And, like, the one girl had a lance. So, like, that weapon was kind of interesting. I actually used it anyway. But yeah, it was mine for action.
Your next category is monsters and enemies. Sky.
I picked World Break to come out on top on that because it was interesting to see, like I mentioned in the action, you saw characters fighting other characters and using a different styles and different techniques to be able to break through defenses and offenses and stuff like that.
Highway.
I actually had Isaka as the best for monsters and enemies.
You screwed the curve up, dude.
I know I did. It was the first time Isaka moves up out of like fourth or fifth. But and not that it was because it was like key animation versus CG, but I just thought the monsters in Isaka looked really nice. I had that cool lightning wolf and the snake, although the snake got kind of weird with the psychedelic pattern at the end.
But you experienced?
But for me, the real thing of note in this was Fafnir, which had the worst monsters. Oh my gosh, they just kind of stood around as like just static CG sprites. It was just awful.
What were they?
They're supposed to be dragons, but one was like a turtle. Another one was a turtle,
and every time they zoomed in on one of its eyes, you could see the polygons around its eyes. Yes. It's like they didn't even bother to finish the animation for this character. They thought this will do.
They had another one that this big dragon, this big blue thing standing around, and I'm like, it's missing a part that it needs. Would that be a third leg? Maybe.
Fosh for monsters.
On the World Break 2, like Skyline, I thought they had this giant monster earlier in the series that was like this. It had a weird like shell and had like faces on it. It was kind of creepy looking. So I guess creep factor kind of was like what drew me in on that one because it did look pretty creepy. And the other one would be Chin Mao was just as the worst. They didn't even really have any monsters. They had a monster at the end. That was it. So, yeah, they kind of didn't do very much with that.
A monster that they barely showed only after they killed him.
Right. Oh, it was like
it was so cool because it reminded me of, like, I mean, this is out of left field for a lot of people, but it reminded me of a monster they described in the tabletop role-playing game Werewolf the Apocalypse back in the 90s. It was just basically the blasted, haunted, ugly, so-called unholy space of, like, the really bad werewolves in this game. They're their cairn, their holy spot, was this mutated, horrible worm that was messed up because of the Trinity atomic explosion blast. And I cop, oh, explore deeper and deeper into this monster. No, you're just going to chop it up, aren't you? Okay, thanks.
Well, that, and they had that one guy, he had this house, whatever, and turned into a monster. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
This is stupid. I'm
dead. Actually, I kind of like that. I kind of like that idea, you know.
It was.
Got some magic, but, you know, they just kind of fluffed it at the end.
I was, me and my brother making fun of it, kind of like, when they blew it up, it was like, wouldn't that, I wonder if that counts as house insurance, because that was his house. It was blew it up.
You two sound like you have a whole lot of devilish times when you're together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had to record half the stuff we said. Oh, man. Maybe one day.
All right, the next category here is always the most important one in a fantasy harem series, and that's the story. Always so much detail.
Say harem.
Which girl wants to get in the main guy's bed? Okay, that's a great
All
story.
All of them.
Everyone, even the guys.
All right, so which one comes out the best, Skyline?
Worldbreak comes out the best as far as overall story. I kind of liked what they were building up for because they started with the ending first, and you kind of wonder how they got there, and that was kind of fluffed up. How they brought that about, but it was still actually a pretty interesting step. And then along the rest of the way, I just kind of like how every girl kind of helped him, challenged him a little bit more, and helped him build up until he could finally just basically go off and invade Russia all by himself. I'm sorry, I couldn't say that with a straight face.
Yeah, invade Russia and flood it.
That
one girl, because she blew up the mountain. She's like, "Whoops, oh, that's cool," and he's like, left it like that. Like, that's cool. And he got struck by lightning. That was pretty funny. And to survive that, the girl got in bed with him without her clothes, and apparently that's how she heals people. And yeah, because that's why not, you know.
Highway, do you agree with Sky?
Yeah, I do. Worldbreak had the best story. From the way that it got the characters together, first with Urushibara and Satsuki, and then then bringing in Maya, and then just how they progressed the story. It was the best one, and also it's kind of silly with the remembered powers that you inherited from past lives and crap, but
the main character will never run out of past lives, apparently.
Yeah, but he's the first person who's ever had two, but apparently he's got like six, because he's got six harem members.
Yeah, for every girl he gained, he had to at least remember. Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Another past life. Awesome.
Yeah. Thinking with the Russian leader one. Too. I think even she had a past life.
Also, the thing about the past lives they have is they're not really historical past lives. They seem like parallel lives in like other dimensions or something like that. That was a cool idea, really, when you get right down to it.
Except for the part where the guy's like, one flashback where he's just walking through his army and just
That was probably the awful first episode.
Is this guy like a blender? He's just, you know?
And the rest of the army doesn't move in on him or anything. And they're like, I don't want anything to do with that.
Just keep throwing bodies at him. Maybe he'll get tired.
Oh, I left the cat alone. Oh, I've got to walk the cat.
Best general ever.
It was an old Tasmanian devil cartoon.
Exactly. That's what it was. Little blenders flying through people.
Fosh, do you agree with those two?
Somewhat. I mean, I put that as like my third pick, but Duo was my favorite. It's something I look forward to every week when I watched it. The story wasn't that great, but just the character dynamics through Julie and Futura were kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And they even brought Miyabi in for a try. They tried to do a love triangle, but it didn't work out so well. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of characters in there eventually kind of come to his side that they start liking him, but only two. Which is, you know, why I like that one better. Mm. Not everyone wants to get to the main guy. It's only just Julie and Thor. Mm.
Before I go to the next planned category, did all of these shows have a beach episode?
Yeah, I
think so, yeah.
Isekai
didn't.
Quickly ask,
no,
what was the best?
Did not, because it would have been the worst one.
Oh, best beach episode? I'd probably go to Worldbreak for me. That was just funny how some of the characters were interacting with each other.
World Breaks was the best one for me because they used it as an opportunity to bring in characters that they hadn't brought in before.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It wasn't just show off the boobs of the characters that we have. And it was show the vice president.
Oh, vice president! She was freaking hilarious.
I know. She grabbed anybody, anything that moved. She was pretty much hot for. For me, it's probably a tie between Duo and Fafnir because it had the most potential for nudity.
All right, include that in the scoring highway. let's see. We got a couple more categories here. Concept, Sky.
Concept for me overall wins with Mao. And I'm trying to think out why, because, you know, Worldbreak came in second, which kind of had probably a more broad thing to speak, but I kind of like how they concentrated on just the three main characters, and all the other characters are kind of, you know, satelliting around them, and they just kind of built it up from there. The ending was a bit fluffy, but overall I just thought it was a stronger concept.
Yeah, Mal for some reason was more like, oh, let's do a family origin story, which I never saw in the harem before. That was kind of surprising. Even though, you know, Maria and the other, you know, girl aren't really related to him, they, you know, they'll kind of act like that.
They'll eventually have to let that go, and I hope they do let that go when the second series comes out.
Well, especially the last episode, because they went almost full on. It was almost like a sexual hentai scene. I'm like,
They almost did it then there with Maria filming there.
Yeah, he just pulls her shirt off almost and just starts kissing her. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Someone that you think is your sister. Like, whoa.
Fosh, will go to you.
I went with the Duo for a concept. I don't know. Again, like the weapon idea was kind of cool. And when they brought in all the students in the first episode, they're like, okay, person next to you, you gotta fight them. And that was kind of cool. And then when they beat them, those kids that got beaten, eventually they had to leave, but they brought them back later on. But just the idea of it was kind of a shock factor that they would go that way and even go to some links where they had that killing game at the end of the series where these people were killing students left and right, and they're just like, well, this is part of the school. That's how it goes. But so, I don't know, that whole part was kind of interesting to me.
Highway concept.
I went with Worldbreak again. I'm kind of one note on this, except for Isco with the best monsters. But no, I like that both the past lives things and the way they got their powers. I really liked the Plena, which was the aura that Fosh didn't like. It reminded me of another story that Spider Robinson did. But I liked the way they got that. I liked the way that they had the writing for the spells, and that they had two categories of people fighting that wasn't really that made it interesting. He had like the one group doing the writing and the other group doing the physical fighting.
All right, and the last category, individually, what was overall your favorite of the harem shows this season, Sky?
Worldbreak comes out at the end. I just felt, you know, after just looking at all the just looking down the column, that pretty much is where it comes from. So overall is overall.
Highway?
I had Worldbreak also, which
and
is no surprise.
Fosh.
Duo, because again, this is that something I look forward to every week. You know, Shin Mao was number two, because again, with a character like Maria, she kind of was just, you know, you always wonder what she would be doing next. Like, what is she going to do next to, you know, getting the main guy, you know, all that stuff. And she kept surprising me every week that she would try something, you know, extreme. That almost like a Momo from To Love Ru. She has the same kind of vibe where Momo doesn't care who's around as long as she's doing what she likes doing and, you know, mess with the main guy. So, you know, I would have put Shin Mao at number one, but yeah,
I hope she becomes more like Momo. That would be a treat.
Oh, yeah, I think she will. I mean, she is a succubus after all, and that's what they do. So,
all right. So we talked about individually. Now, Highway, you've compiled some stats from these results. Do you want to talk about those a little bit?
We ranked the. I actually gave points for all the stuff that we had here, and for overall, Worldbreak wins. Shin Mai Mao second, Duo third, and then Iska and Fafnir way behind. Which is not surprising at all.
Who makes Fafnir? What studio?
I have no idea.
Diomedia?
Another
five,
one.
Five Guys in the Basement.
Five Guys in the Basement.
Diomedia makes... Does Diomedia make two of them?
Diomedia makes Worldbreak. Mal is Production IMS. Duo is 8-Bit. Fafnir is Diomedia. And Isica was ARMS.
Okay, yeah. The kind of studios that you would expect to appear on such a discussion like this.
Where's Zebek?
Oh, yeah. Zebek.
You know, hey, I always try to remind people that Zebek, they did the remake for Space Battleship Yamato, which was freaking awesome. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They did, you know, Sokoku no Fafnir Aggressor. They did that. They did Mecha this time.
Oh, I didn't pay one bit of attention to that. Was that any good?
I didn't watch it.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
All I know is two dudes talking to one mech, and I'm like, nope, ain't it part of that. So you can have that.
Expand your horizons, sir.
So many. I sat through three. I'm not going to sit through another one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with the harem shows, sounds like it was a kind of a legendary season in terms of quote unquote quality.
But soon we battle the Blu-rays, you know, which one had the best, you know, boob effects and all that stuff. So which one had the best, uncensored version?
it's going to be Isica because it had some of the worst censoring, which was just the black blob.
They released pictures on Sankaku about that.
Who wants to watch Isica again?
Yeah. I'd rather watch. I think I'd rather watch. World Break or Shin Mao in the Blu-ray.
Yeah,
Shin Mao definitely, because there's a lot. Shin Mao's going to be a lot of extra stuff. Yeah.
Because it was overall a good show.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking of the black blob censoring, JoJo recently had my favorite battle of this season against Darby, which was really good.
That was awesome.
But the censoring of him smoking a cigarette was so terrible. Like they showed the cherry of the cigarette. And you could see the silhouette of the cigarette in his mouth. Like, you gotta do a little more than that with the censoring if you really don't want to see to show an underage kid smoking on an anime.
Yeah, too edgy for them. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and before that arc came up, I was kind of thinking like, how much do I really have to watch a JoJo? Like, I feel like I could miss arcs and not really miss out on anything, but that one was so good because it was very different and very much a change of pace from what they were doing for, you know, the previous 30-some episodes.
It seemed like that the Cairo villains, or the closer they got the Cairo villains, the last set, they had trumped up as like just god killers. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like it had the most comedic inclination to those episodes ever. I mean, it's just it was a comedy of errors to be able to defeat the villain this time around. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, we got her in the wrong place at the wrong time. We were barely like the one girl that had the magnetic power. You know, we were barely paying attention because we were too busy trying not to get crushed by stuff, and we finally got her in the pincher attack due to no real strategy of our own. We just got kind of lucky. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then they had Oingo Boingo / Zenyatta Mandata. I wish they'd make up their mind about what they're going to call that duo. Yeah. But that was just, it was just one guy uncomfortable in a car for 20 minutes.
Well, I think that's what makes JoJo so fun, is it's not super serious all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's why I like it. I mean, Gintama is the same kind of vibe when I watch it.
I'm just spoiling episode 36 here, but Whole Horse is with Boingo.
Yeah.
I believe he's the one.
Yeah.
And he puts his fingers in his nose, and Whole Horse keeps going on about the thing like, oh, is this accurate? And what am I supposed to do next?
Right,
the episode on that.
And then, of course, it's like the other guys are going, hey, did you get that guy, Jean-Pierre? And they're walking for like 10 minutes. And
yeah.
It's a good show, but kind of weird at times.
I don't mind if I'm spoiled, but did they ever get Kakuyin back into the picture?
He has not been back in yet.
I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it up to the point you have. I'm just wondering, in the manga, does that guy ever come back, or is he just like forever in a hospital with no eyes?
He's indirectly involved in the Darby battle, mm-hmm. Which is pretty neat. You know, speaking of luck, there, that battle with JoJo and him was a lucky. All right, so let's talk about some of the shows that have ended this season. I want to start off by talking about Shiro Bako, which might come out as my favorite from this season because those last two episodes were splendid.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, especially the one up to leading up to where the guy meets the creator of the Ariel Girls was by far one of the best. Just him trying to break into that place is hilarious.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow, this is great. But yeah, you said it was pretty fun. I saw the final episode, and they might be hinting at another season because there's more animes for them to make, obviously.
Yeah, they still have yet to fully achieve the dream, but the last two episodes, they kind of made it like it's almost kind of like its own anime. And that sounds weird to say about an anime, but the way they were going on with the, you know, the battle of the director getting up to the top floor and
that was great.
Fighting guys that were shooting golf balls at him. And
for me, I love the pacing towards the end because when Zuka came in as it wasn't a big surprise that she would eventually come in before the show ended, but when she was able to do her voiceover for that one small character, when they had her doing her voice work and they had her doing that over their temp animatic. I mean, they just had an animatic. They hadn't fully animated the episode yet, but the fullness of her voice just kind of filled that animatic up and gave it a whole lot more life than a couple of sparse drawings like that would. I loved that moment. That moment made me actually break into tears because I thought it was so beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. As I'm quoting somebody on Twitter, Subdued Fangirl, she said, "I'm not crying. I just have the ending to Shiro Bako in my eye."
it was pretty surprising. Yeah,
good call.
I forgot. Oh, about the actual animes that they worked on, Exodus and Third Aerial Girl Squad. Those are anime that, you know what, I'd be kind of interested to see. Like, you know, I remember watching Genshiken and they talk about Kujibiki on Balance like it was so great, and I'm watching the clips like, this looks terrible.
It did look terrible, so I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But same here.
They have released that just one episode of Exodus, and it really is interesting. I didn't think it would be that good a show, but they really pulled it together, and it was a lot of fun to watch that one episode. And I was like, you know, this would be better than maybe half of the shows that you see. But of course, for me, PA Works shows are always better than half the shows you see.
Yeah, and leave it to PA Works to make a dummy production that's better than anything else out there. That's better than most things that are out there, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of the anime they mention, just like from a lot of the studios they mention, are expies. You know, they're just stand-ins for other things. But, you know, Exodus was pretty much their original idea. And even though we could probably say Third Aerial Girls might have an antecedent strike, which is it really doesn't once you saw how the entire production was coming together.
Right.
Right. I mean,
they could get away with making that show because I think everyone wants it.
Well, that and the thing is, PA Works doing different things. For me, they've always been the romance harem, not harem, but romance drama series. They've always produced those for years. So to see them do something like, you know, Exodus or Aerial Girls, it's a little different than what they're used to. So I would be happy to see them do Aerial Girls as a real series. It's like, you know, Girls in Pants are both planes, so they could do that.
Yeah.
In an odd way, Shiro Bako, I assume, is a series that has had success overall, I guess, in terms of viewership. Like, if they wanted to continue the adventures of Miyamori and those girls from high school, if you build an anime, you know, talk about making anime around it, you could almost kind of get a feel for what people like us think about the anime that they're watching and think, hey, you know, this is something that if we made it, it could work. People are kind of interested in it. Similarly to how we're talking about Exodus and Third Aerial Girls.
Right, yeah.
So that was my favorite of this season. Do you guys have any other shows that stood out to you the most?
Well, Shirobako for me is a really good show, and it's one that is almost my favorite. But I have to say that my favorite is Cross Ange, and I know Fosh is going to be like, "God, no, it's so terrible," but Cross Ange is just the show that I as much as I kept Shirobako and was like, "Yeah, I'm going to save this for like Friday night instead of Thursday night when I'm busy." So Friday night kind of like go into the weekend with this show. For me, Cross Ange was the show I saved for Sunday night. That's the end of the week, like best show, because I just looked forward to it. It's so much fun to watch, so much, so exciting, and I just like everything about the characters that they have and how they're doing the show.
Yeah, I think this for me, this being a Sunrise fan, just coming off of a Buddy Complex, I wanted something different. And Cross Ange is different, but for me, I think I was looking more forward to the mecha side of things and the action side. Character-wise, it was just, I don't know, for me, it fell apart when you had characters like Tusk appear, who is the token Alma Fall in your crotch character every time I get a chance. Well, just fine. Me, I mean, that's how he is. But
yeah. They took that and pushed it so far to the next level that it became the like more than the trope that it is. It was just so dialed up to 11 that every time he'd do this, he'd fall inner crotch, which was naked for whatever reasons, for just because she either was being hanged or she just got out of bed or whatever. It's just that they worked it out so well. Yeah. To kind of defang that was like a two love rue trope.
And they brought Embryo in, which is this OP character that can't be killed. Everyone, I get Mac, they always try to kill him. Like, you can't kill him. Leave him. stop trying. And they always kept trying, and it's like, oh my god.
This is the bullet. It'll do it.
Right. Then you have people that supposedly died on screen, but they came back later on. They didn't die. I don't like when shows do that, but
I'm kind of more towards Fosh's side than I am towards Highway side for Cross Ange. I enjoy it for its unbridled joy, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, wow, you're making me scratch my head way too much, Cross Ange.
Right, but again, I'm happy Sunrise they do break off from Gundam and try something different. But this part wasn't what I was looking for. So.
Love Live season 3.
To me, the Sun or Cross Ange is the Sunrise production that was between the just idiocy of Valvrave and the boringness of Buddy Complex.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit of both. I mean, they kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like 80% of the wackiness of Valvrave and none of the boringness of Buddy Complex.
Right, yeah. Good call.
Skyline, what about your most favorite?
My personal favorite is one of the shows I'm covering, and that's Junketsu no Maria. I'm really loving the story and how it developed, about how they explored her as a character, about how they explored the idea of what that virginity meant, and it wasn't, as the series has progressed, it wasn't what you thought in any way, shape, or form. It had to do with, purity of your idea, purity of your actions and what you wanted to do in the face of opposition. I loved it for a fact that I was always looking forward to a show that had a little bit of a historical nature to it, because I'm such a huge history geek when you get right down to it. And, for them to give me clues midway through the show that I could actually say, hey, this is actually taking place in 1450, even though you never told me, kind of got me really excited at one point, because that's just the kind of person I am. Character design on it is gorgeous. Colors on it pops. It almost reminds me of a Ghibli production at times. And just a beautiful show altogether.
Moving on to some other shows to discuss from this season. I really liked Do Raw's Return. I think I added too many Raw's there. And what I really liked
your tongue.
And what I really liked about the finale was, with the first season, they did a nice job of closing up the story, but still leaving us thinking, oh, we'd like to see more. But they didn't add any cliffhanger type stuff. But because we know that with this series, it'll be back in July, and then after the summer season, it'll be back in the winter season. They had a nice couple bits of cliffhangers, I won't spoil them, to what we would look forward to in the summer, and I really like that, and I like how things kind of got a little hectic, and they kind of got out of control for Yuga Mine, so do a rock back in form.
Yeah, like how they brought in all those new characters and kind of put them in the series, like they were there the entire time.
I like the idea of Verona being in there, because you think about how supernatural the city is with Shizuo and Celti, that you have these characters coming in that aren't that familiar with it, and to see them react to, like, oh my god, that's the black bike rider, and this guy just picked up my motorcycle like it was nothing.
Right, yeah, like Anri, and she gets some more action here too. So
I like Verona, but for me, Sloan just looked like, where'd they get this reject from Johnny Quest?
With those eyebrows.
He looked like he was from another show.
Right, yeah, they have fingers like that. That's for sure.
Well, there's someone like me who kind of has stalled out at episode 7 of the original series. Can anyone get me over that hump? Can anyone give me something to look forward to?
I can't, honestly. The first series was way too much of the stupid gang stuff. And the second series, really, this one that we just finished, was starting to get to that, but they dealt with it better. And the gang stuff was happening, but it was a background to the story with Verona and the story with Akane and the story with Celti and even Shizuo, that the gang stuff was happening, but it wasn't the focus.
And I would say, after you get past the gang stuff, the Skyline, they do dive back more into the supernatural with Celti in her head.
Yeah.
If you're interested in her backstory, you learn all about her.
Well, that and probably all that. Yeah, that and the three main high school kids was what I was mostly interested in. When you get right,
yeah, you
down
get
to
more
it.
Of that.
You can just skip to like episode 13, and if they're not talking about Celti yet, keep skipping ahead till they are.
And just read the Wikia entry for it. Okay.
Let me see, what else did I watch that I enjoyed from this season?
Well, South Asian Classroom. I mean, that I know it's getting another half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed it, and for people that may be a bit behind, I think in the past two or three episodes, things have really picked up in terms of the assassination attempts against Koro Sensei, including a computer that he modified to be full LCD screen.
You gotta love Ritsu. She's awesome.
The one thing I'm always wondering about is like, Nagisa, like, is he a guy? Is he a girl? I don't even know. He looks like a girl to me.
Yeah. Nagisa is adorable.
The way he wears his pants, it makes me think he's a chick. He's got some wide hips.
He's got some hips.
I'm like, wow. Yeah. This character design. And he's got two little twin tail things on top of his head. I'm like, okay. I'm a little confused, but all right.
On kind of similar subject to that, I loved the episode where, you know, his Bit Sensei first came up, which is a great anime name.
He's funny.
Bit Sensei is getting mad at her and stuff, and Kayano held up a sign saying "Down with big boobs," and Nagisa looks like, "That's what you're complaining about?"
Right.
I love that moe turn she took recently to be able to stab the other teacher.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's just like, "Ugh, fine." And Kuro Sensei, it's probably the highlight of that series.
Oh yeah.
Just how he can go from super serious to like off the wall goofy. And just insane. I'm like, wow, I love that. It's fun.
I like how they've built him up in that, because it's obviously everyone wants to and needs to kill this thing. But he's the only person that gives a crap about this class.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
When you get right down to it. So I love that dichotomy. It's just kind of like, we can't kill this person. He loves us. He cares. I mean, he's obviously there.
It's almost like
he does.
It's like, we want to kill him as late as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
If we have to, 23. That's when we want to do it.
Mm-hmm. And recently, with the other people coming in, the realization that actually we want to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I got to hand it to Jun Fukuyama for doing a great role of that. In the dub, it's the guy who did Krillin's voice in Dragon Ball Z. He He's doing the character. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, you know, bald guy playing another bald guy. Like, that's great. That's great. He does pretty good with that, too. So both props to both the actors. Just, they're doing a fun job with that. You can tell that Jin Fukami is probably having fun with that. Just absolutely insane. I mean, same with, like, Aragi Kun's actor. I forgot his name, but you can tell when they're doing their characters, they go all the way with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
Yurikuma Arashi, which I'm marathoning right now. I'm up to episode 9 as we wait for the final episode on Monday.
Right. Shock!
Kuma Shock!
Yeah, that show. I don't know.
Or post credits. Yurikuma! Or auto tuned or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I think that story really picks up by episode 7, I believe. It was doing the typical Ikuhara thing of, you know, repeating scenes for a number of episodes. Do you accept love or something? And then it changed to, do you accept boxes or something? Or will you give up on boxes or love? I'll give up on love. I want boxes.
Yeah, I think that show really, really did move into it. It really got halfway through and then picked another gear and just went from there, and has been a great story since then.
Once
they started laying the basics for the characters in about the first 4, I would argue 5 episodes, it was allowed to take off and do it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Because, but, you know, reviewing it for the, like, when I think we were, Overcooled and I were going into, like, I think the 6th episode, and then she came across and she said, yeah, can you do 7 and 8 in a row? Because, you know, I'll be on vacation and won't be able to do it. I was like, crap, do I have to? Really? I was used to and actually kind of liking, you know, skipping a week. And now I have to do 2 in a row. But fortunately, they were like 2 of the best episodes I'd ever seen of the show so far.
Yeah, for me, it's like I like the series, but at the point where they drag it out too much, the story between...
Ikuhara is
kind of
like,
I don't
really
care anymore. I'm like, that's great. You guys know each other before. Oh, yeah, I know. I stopped the penguin drum, but still, it's like, for me, it's like I get to the point with Yurikuma, where it's like, I don't really care anymore. I mean, I'm watching it. It's fun, but I just don't care anymore about the main girl's problems. It's like, yeah, whatever.
I felt a little out of it in, I believe it was episode 8, where there was the big confrontation up on the roof, and Lulu was, you know, telling Kureha what was happening, and then that's when the funder came in, and it was like, okay, this is the part where Ikuhara is intentionally holding back story elements.
Right.
We saw it in the next episode, but
gotta create that tension.
What else did you guys like from this season?
Akutsuki no Yona.
Yeah, Death Parade. There you go. I was going to say Death Parade.
Now.
I heard a lot of things. I want to ask about Akutsuki no Yona because
yay!
I was watching it and thinking, you know, I'll get back to this at some point. So you like it?
Yeah.
I'm only 5 episodes in, and I found it to be kind of interesting.
I almost got a bit tired of it about an episode or two into the Blue Dragon arc. Because it felt like it was dragging on. But once it got out of that, when you put your characters in a cave and isolate them and have the other character they're going after mute, you're just asking for trouble when you get right down to it. It just felt like it really fell into a hole at that point. Mm-hmm. But once they got out of the cave and once they got back on the road and once they got together with pirates and they were doing all sorts of crazy things with the Green Dragon, it got to be really awesome.
So what's the episode frame of that? For this
24, right?
Is that midway?
Oh,
it's done.
Yeah, 24 and it's over.
I'm asking where this arc is at that you were feeling.
It's in the middle.
Yeah, it's in the middle.
Like probably 12 to 14-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, I would give it that.
It was a little bit after halfway because, I mean, the first part was getting Hak and Yona out. And then finding Gija took a little bit of time, and they've really sped up the finding the other dragons. It could have turned into like a total road picture, where it's like, okay, now we're gonna spend another 6 episodes finding the next dragon, but But they found it's like they took three episodes to find the white dragon, and then three episodes to find the blue dragon, and then the green dragon's arc took a lot longer. They found him faster, but it was let's do more stuff.
Yeah, it was more adventuresome.
Yeah, so they had an adventure there. So, and that actually helped to break up the let's find the next dragon kind of thing. And then the yellow dragon just kind of, hey.
just kind of showed up.
So it was Dragon Ball Z without the Dragon Balls. Find the dragon instead.
Okay. You don't have to find the balls. You just have to find the dragons.
Yeah, find the dragons.
I heard Death Parade in there, which I believe shows the potential of the anime Mirai project.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned that, you know, they did release the new ones. I saw pictures of them and stuff during the preview chart. But yeah, Death Parade, like you said, coming from that, just a 5-minute special to becoming a full-blown series was pretty surprising to me. I mean,
it was a full 24 minutes.
Right, yeah, it was pretty cool seeing how that became an actual series now. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the final, but I've been hearing a lot of things that they explain a lot of things in the final, how things work and all that, and I don't know, I just thought that cast of characters is pretty unique in that. And every week they had I guess people would complain, the death of the week, which they really didn't. They kind of changed it up every once in a while with, you know, seeing from the other perspective and the background characters doing something, and even showing a different judge of the week with the girl who had a crush on this pop star. That was pretty funny.
So, I love that. I mean, I love that arc.
Yeah, for them to do, actually, they can balance comedy pretty well in that with it being such a dark story. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
And you kind of get that a lot of times when you have a really dark story in a really dark setting that you can get away with some really good comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the show was really touching for me. Like, it was, let's explore people. And that's the kind of show I always like. I mean, other people like shows about fighting or mecha or whatever. I like shows about people. And it was first and foremost a show about the people. It wasn't about the game. It wasn't about the deciding. It was about the people.
Right.
By the people, for the people.
I would even throw maybe a series like, which I thought was just going to be a harem, How to Raise a Boring Girlfriend was kind of like that, where they focus on the characters a lot, like what they want to do, their dreams, and what they are looking for to accomplish. I thought that was kind of interesting how they did that, and even though I won't spoil too much, but the ending, actually, I was surprised they had a moment where they sang the Gurren Lagann opening. It was really cool.
Yep.
I was like, wow,
when
I did not expect
that. I was cheering.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, they're going Gurren Lagann, nice. And they do give away a lot of, like, other shows because the guy has all these figures from other shows. And you're like, how are they going to get away with this as an anime? Because there's stuff from the Sword Art Online, there's Oryumo, there's all these different shows in there. You're like, how are they going to get away with this? I'm thinking to myself, like, if they dub this, how are they going to get away with all these franchises that they don't really own?
Actually, A1 Pictures has everything in common that you see in
Funimation.
He is a complete and total A1 Pictures otaku. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
By necessity.
I would have thought you would have seen that more in Chirobako, like PA work stuff. Like even when they were delivering stuff to the TV stations, it was Tokyo NX.
Yeah.
Not MX.
Well, I guess once you start 1XB, you got to kind of continue it all the way through when you get right down to it, or else you kind of break the convention.
Taro did have some characters on his desk, but they weren't you couldn't tell they were from something else.
Right, they weren't like a color change version. They looked like original things when you get right down to it.
Yeah,
one of the guys had like a figure from like a horror movie. Maybe it's Freddy or Jason, but he had a figure on top of his desk. I could see him. Like, well, it's kind of weird.
Let me see what else is there of interest. You already talked about so many of the Fab Service series. or the fan service, the ecchi shows, harems. You ever know Yatterman was one that I heard a lot of that I think you guys liked a lot?
Yeah, that was a surprise out. I kind of left field. I didn't think it was going to be much when I was doing the chart originally, but after watching it, I mean, it's kind of cool. They, you know, learning that it's an old school anime from like 70s, 80s. Came back now that they redid it and made it kind of modern. It was kind of cool seeing how they did that. The characters are interesting enough to keep the show going for me anyway.
Yeah.
They even have the Mach 5 appear, which is kind of weird.
Yep.
From Speed Racer. I was like, wow, this is very interesting. They would put that in there. So maybe a little fan service for the old school fans, maybe.
Last series I want to ask about is the Seven Deadly Sins, Nanatsu no Taizai.
Uh-huh.
That is that officially ending at 24?
I think so. I mean, yeah, I think so. But that series is fun too. It's usually I don't really get into the fantasy shows because there's so many of them, but this one's kind of nice because it's just again a cast of characters that are just fun to watch. They play off each other so well. Even like character who's immortal, like Greed, who you can basically cut him in half or balance, and he's fine about it. And he just, you know, because he's immortal. So they have all these different dynamic characters, and like Diane being a giant, which is something you never really see in fantasy anime, a giant character who's, you know, part of the cast, besides like One Piece, which has a bunch of giants. But yeah, Taizai is a lot of fun, with like, a lot of cool characters.
I liked it more towards the beginning than I did towards the end. It got a bit too shonen showdown for me at the end there. It just did that sort of never really floats my boat, just because it was all these factions and a huge. I mean, whenever you just throw like 15 or 20 characters on screen, I kind of glaze over and kind of go, what?
Yeah, I think people would also throw Contact Collection in there. People would have a problem with that too. But there's so many characters to focus on that they don't really get a lot of screen time. And, you know, for me, I don't know, Kantai was one of my favorites of the season because it's just, again, something I look forward to every week. Yeah, I was reviewing it, but I was only doing every four episodes. But for me, I was always curious to see how they would take this game that's not really graphically impressive and bring it to, like, animation and anime and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's kind of cool seeing that. But, again, yeah, a lot of characters. Maybe too many characters. They could do without a few of them.
But yeah, I mean, we all commented on your post about it.
Oh, yeah.
But it was fun enough. It just wasn't great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got to say about Contact Collection.
It had potential, but it just felt like they didn't capitalize on the correct amount of potential they should have. A smaller cast, you know, with a bit more... I don't know. It just felt like they didn't know how to spend their capital very well.
Right. Oh, I almost forgot. One last show I'll mention is another show with a big cast, Cinderella Girls.
Mm-hmm. And I was about to talk about it.
Yeah, they've done a real good job in like splitting up each girl into different groups. Mm-hmm. And I like how they, especially the last episode I saw, the cat girl and the rock girl. That was pretty funny to see those two.
It was cute seeing those two get together.
Yeah.
I think they've done well to, like, in the first series, they kind of said all of a sudden, okay, everyone's popular already,
right?
And let's do this. This one, they're kind of like, here's how these people got popular. Here's how these people got popular. I think my favorite episode was the stupid game show one.
Oh, that was great.
Yes.
With Anzu. Like, telling every question at the end. Wow. Like, leave it to her to be the one to figure out all these trivia questions.
Mm-hmm. And I love it. I don't know the answer to that question. Sorry. Whatever.
Well, one character I don't really like too much is Rika in that one episode where she's just like saying all these, like, I don't want to call her, you know, call it out, but she's a little slutty in these episodes. She's talking about she doesn't mind exposing herself to everyone. I'm like, wow.
I immediately said she obviously hasn't been browsing Pixiv.
I know. It's like, and she's just. I guess maybe she's like maybe 12, 13, whatever, and she's just saying all these adult lines. I'm like, you don't really have no idea what you're saying, do you?
Nope.
But you've been hanging out with your sister probably way too long. I think everyone has general hatred for the tallest chick, Karara or whatever.
I like her.
Oh, gosh.
my brother hates her. I think she's okay. I'm like, yeah, she's got an annoying voice, but at least she's kind of different. And then you have the Chunibyo girl with. I don't really care for her at all, but she's. I'm like, how do you get work if no one can understand you? Like, seriously.
Yeah, you understood her. I think Kirara worked best when she was Anzu's life support function. You know.
See, I like her best when she's not doing that.
Yeah, me too.
To me, it was kind of like it's Kirari just being subsiding under Anzu. I just didn't like
that. It's like Master Blaster from Mad Max.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, I can't get that image out of my head right now.
And then you got this producer. He's not even like the original producer from the first Auto Master. He's more like, yeah, do this. do that. But I mean, he's come around.
I think it's interesting the way they've dealt things with the producer. That he certainly at the beginning seemed like he was just kind of like this suit that just kind of walked
around.
He had no idea what was going on, and there wasn't anything happening, and he's trying to get Rin to join just by like harassing her into it.
Her?
Yeah, stalking her.
And he gets arrested a few times too because he's done. They think he's doing lewd things to these girls. I'm like, oh my god! Like one episode, he was taking pictures and he gets arrested for it. I'm like, wow.
It's kind of like almost like a harem show where like a harem can each member can kind of reflect upon a facet of the main character's personality. Only at this time it started off he had absolutely no personality, and the more they flesh out the girls, the little bit more personality he gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's starting to come around.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's kind of like he's kind of like he's got his daycare and he's watching all these kids. Like, oh my god, like these kids are just especially when the episode they bring in all their personal stuff. They want to bring in like one thing from their house. He's just kind of like, okay, I guess.
Anzu's was the perfect choice. I mean, you have to bring in your cute little recliner.
Right, yeah. But yeah, that's a show that's got a lot of fun characters. Mm-hmm. For an idol show, I mean, people are just like, oh, another idol show. It's similar, but like you said before, they do have, each girl has their moment, and you get to see where they come from. They're not famous right off the bat. They have to work for it now, which is kind of interesting.
Last show I'm interested to hear you guys talk about, because I don't see that much talk about it, actually, is Kofuku Graffiti.
Oh, yeah.
There's not a lot to say about it. It's really good to watch. I'm sure we're all watching it, but it's one of those things that's like, it's all right out there.
All right.
It is what it is. It's nice to watch. There's no deeper. There is a deeper meaning. There's a lot about friendship in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of family and all that stuff like that.
It's not that there's no twists. There's no plot. It is as slice of life as you can get. And it's a nice, fun watch.
No head tilts, unfortunately.
You think we could adapt our writing to the point to where we could just like maybe make like, you know, brief like little placeholders just in case people do want to talk about it every week or every other week or something like that. We could do it for something like a Kofuku Graffiti or the upcoming Hello Kenyuro Mosaic or something like that.
I will say that if people think that when the girls eating in that show is erotic, wait till they see Shigeki no Soma come out next season.
I don't think it's foodgasm. I don't think it's very attractive, actually. I could do without close-ups of people's lips.
Oh, they don't really do that. It's more like in Soma.
High-waisted feet either. Yeah. So you know, hey,
it's like they're naked and angels are pulling on their clothes.
Right, it's like Yuri Kuma, I would say, in terms of like, oh my god, you know.
Awesome, can't wait for
symbolism. But yeah, Graffiti, I watch it every week. I mean, one thing it does for me is make me want to eat food. I'm like, god, I'm so hungry right now. That's the worst thing about that show, is like, the food looks so good, it's like, oh my god. but yeah, it's, like you said before, there's nothing really to talk about every week. All right. It's Shaft's kind of, one of the weakest shows, I would say, in terms of Shaft.
I can make one brief mention of one show. Could I talk about Milky Holmes, or would that just be useless?
Anyway,
moving on.
Go for it if you want.
Yeah, so there are some shows we're going to gloss over. Fosh and I are going to be talking about All Noah Zero and Log Horizon. I'll just say for All Noah Zero right now, I'm glad it's over.
Yay.
Yeah, I'm glad it is too. I'll be honest. God,
our long national nightmare is over.
Yeah, really. And then there's also Whirling Girls, which Fosh and Sky talk about weekly on the mini talk.
Yeah, that's a fun one.
And I'm going to close off episode 53 here and mention that in the spring 15 season, I'm going to be doing Metaverse Weekly. So it's just going to be me and one other writer from the Metanorn team. We're going to do news, views on recent episodes, and we'll have a discussion segment where we kind of get away from the current anime and kind of talk about some things that I think Metanorn has been kind of missing, I feel, in the past year or so is a lot of editorial type topics, a lot of discussion on certain things in anime instead of just what episode of what show we're watching. Metanorn is definitely an episodic blog, but it's something I think that has been missing, and I hope that I can replicate in some small way on the podcast weekly. And so we're going to go weekly, try to keep current with all the shows, and I hope you listen. And our spring 2015 preview is being worked on right now. Hopefully it'll be up soon, just in time for the start of the spring season. I believe there's been some really good progress made recently as far as getting all the content done, so do look forward to that soon. You guys have anything else to add before I sign off?
Nothing really. Just this season, winter season was pretty good. All the carryover shows were pretty good. Parasite, you know, even Sagatsu finally ended. So I'm just waiting. And we only have one show carrying over to the spring, which I'm kind of relieved on. It's just Assassination Classroom. So I'm glad it's not like five shows from this season carrying over.
It is nice getting that break from all the old shows to the new shows.
And I looked on a chart, and for the future, summer only has three carrying over.
That's good.
Yeah, with winter, I was, you know, it's a couple weeks ago, I was like, man, I'm ready for this season to be done. Like, you know, some of the stuff was getting a little bit stale, like y'all know Zero. And, you know, I'm you know, this spring season looks really good in terms of the amount of quality shows that I'm expecting to watch a fair bit from this coming season.
Well, don't sell winter short. It had some really great shows. Shirobako, Parasite, Death Parade. I mean, we've talked about a lot of these shows, and there are a lot of good episodes of stuff. So I don't think there was anything disappointing about winter at all.
Yeah, I didn't realize about Parasite until just recently that the manga was finished releasing 20 years ago.
Oh, really? I didn't know that either.
Yeah, it's an old manga, yep. Very old.
I like that, you know, we saw that with Ping Pong also. Ping Pong was older. I kind of like the idea of anime going, you know, back in time to find these manga properties that are pretty good, like Parasite was. All right. Thank you for listening. I hope you join me in the many weeks of the Spring 15 season. So for Fosh, for Highway, for Skyline, I'm Jero. We will see you next time on the Metaverse Podcast. Yeah.